Good evening. Glad you're all with us this evening. We're privileged to have a young man that we've come to know, Ralph Williams, and his wonderful wife, Cindy, in the back, and her daughter, Caitlin, with us this evening. Ralph works with the Bear Valley Bible Institute Extension School Program. Wow. Long title. So he must be important. Ralph has been, we've worked with Ralph, and this is one of the mission outreaches that Woodland Oaks helps support. So we, on the mission committee, I'm just one member of the mission committee, and but we have made it our goal, objective, to try and have folks from the mission works that we support to come in periodically to give a report to so that you can lay eyes on them, hear what they're doing, and have you an opportunity to meet them, because we have a lot of new people. So please avail yourself of this while Ralph and Cindy and Caitlin are here, to get to know them, shake their hand, ask some questions, whatever you want to do. But please make them feel at home here at Woodland Oaks. The Bear Valley School, primary thrust of the program that Ralph works in is the establishment of schools throughout the world, really. They are, a lot of them are in Africa, and of all places, one in Nepal, there's another one that they're looking at, I think, in Paraguay, and all over the place. And the goal of this program is to teach native citizens, native men, the Bible, to teach them to become preachers, give them an education in that. Then they go back to their villages or to the mission, to the various locations in their own country, teach their countrymen, rather than the way that it's been done years ago, which I think everybody has finally concluded was not the way to do, to bring them to the U.S., train them, and send them home. They didn't want to go home. Don't blame them. I wouldn't either. So with that, Ralph Williams is going to give us an update.
Thank you, Ralph. Thank you for calling me young. Did you notice he called me a young man? Did you notice that? Thanks, Cleo. You said it just like I asked you to do it. Well, good evening. It's really, really nice to be back with you, and I don't know where it went. I have not a clue where the year went since we were here last. It was just about a year ago that we came and were able to share with you some things about the work that we are involved in. And yes, you are involved in it as well through us and through the Lord. And I wanted to come back tonight, and they invited me to come back. I think that's a good sign. And so they invited me back to share with you again some highlights of the work that we are involved in. I want to get your attention very quickly, if I can, about something that is staggering. You're looking at it. Between October of last year and April of this year, the authorities tell us that the world population clicked over to 7 billion people. Now, only one that can realize this bigger figure would be the government people. Isn't that right? But 7 billion. How do you get your hands around 7 billion? Well, there's a couple of ways I want to share them with you that I came upon. 7 billion people. If you lined every human being up on the earth, chest to back in a straight line, I'm told that it would go around the equator of the world over 150 times. Does that stagger you? It did me. Another way that I found, I read about, was someone had calculated that 7 billion people would, again, lining up in straight lines, would make 14 lines from here to the moon. Unbelievable, isn't it? Unbelievable. 7 billion people. Let me show you something else. Look at this. This is another way to look at it. And this staggers your imagination as well. In a book that was entitled Our Last Greatest Hope by Randy Floyd, he cites some individuals there and some authorities that tell us that the way to break this 7 billion up is to break them up in, first of all, 750 million people, which is 11% of the 7 billion. And these are all the people who are under what we would call Christendom. That just simply means everything and everybody who says that Jesus is the Son of God, who call themselves Christians. Not just the church, but everything else. So 750 million there, 11%. Look at the next one, 2.6 billion, which is 39% of the total amount, have heard the name of Jesus, but in most cases have rejected him. That's a staggering figure too, isn't it? They've heard the name, but they've rejected. The third one was 3.5 billion. This is 50% of the population. And look at that. They have never heard the name Jesus. It's interesting, isn't it? That, again, is a very staggering thing. I heard something a number of years back ago, and I thought it was kind of an interesting thing, that 87% of the people of the world have tasted Coke, know what it is, and have tasted it. 50% of the world has never heard the name Jesus. Now, calculate that. Unbelievable, isn't it? Note what we've got on the screen under that. Churches of Christ make up 1.3% of number one above. That's calculating our population as a church at 10 million people. Now, it depends on who you talk to. There are some people say that we have only about 4.5 million people. There are others that say we have more than 10. I just kind of picked 10 million so that you could get an idea of what we're dealing with. And then look at the next one. Number three, the above, they live in areas where the Bible and the church cannot be found, and there are very few, if any, missionaries. And then look at number three. It is estimated that missionaries of the Church of Christ number less than 1,500 families outside the U.S. Again, depending upon who you're talking to, some will say less families, and others will say, well, there's a few more than that. But at that point, we realize that we're a minority, of course, and we have a staggering job to do to reach this world that is lost. Think about it. These people are lost. They're not going to go to heaven. And then when you put with that every 1.4 seconds a person dies in the world. Calculate that for the time that we'll be here, and we've already been here. And you'll come up with several hundred people that will die while we're sitting here looking at this. The question comes, of course, well, what do we do about this? Well, let me talk to you for a few minutes, and I want to share some things that some of you may have seen, but for the sake of the fact that it's been a year since I've been here, and some of you may be new to the congregation, I hope you abide me and let me share with you just some things. The church, the philosophy of us at Bear Valley is just basically biblical. It's Matthew 28, 18 through 20. You know those verses. Go therefore and make disciples of all men. Go and make disciples. How do you make a disciple? Well, he tells us, teaching them and baptizing them and then teaching them. That's what we see our duty as doing, to go into the world and train men to go into their country in their own language and to teach the gospel to the people of their own country and to establish their own churches. Let's just look for a few moments. The Bear Valley Extension School program. We have 18 undergraduate schools at the present time. We have 8 graduate schools. And let me just say that the graduate schools are basically aimed at training the native teachers and the native directors. Also, our locations are on four continents. Projected student body at any one time is from 350 to 400. That means that at any one time, we are educating around 350 with the 18 schools that we have in the graduate schools. We're educating 350 men to graduate them and send them into the world. It can be broken up another way that every year, we generally graduate about half of those, which would be somewhere between 175 and 200 students, are graduated every year in the different countries where we are to go and teach their people and to train their people and to establish congregations. We also have native directors and teachers for our staffs. There are no Americans that are at any of our schools. We prefer that because we want them to believe and know that it is their school, not our school. So Bear Valley is a partner with these schools. Our goal is to train them, train their staffs, and train their students and their teachers so that one of these days we can hand those schools back to them and they can continue to do that. We've already done that, basically, with a couple of our schools. We've already basically handed it back to them and allowing them to do all that needs to be done. Our classes are a two-year program, and we teach all 48 books of all 48 courses, which covers every book of the Bible. We just finished revamping our curriculum, redoing it completely over. We have standardized outlines for all of our courses now that people can get and use. Our schools, first one is in Guatemala, second one, Honduras, third one, in Paraguay. Now, that's one of our newest schools. It's not started up yet, but it will this next March. We have schools in Ukraine. That's a school in Liberia. It's a brand new school. That's a school in Ghana, a second school in Ghana, a school in Togo in West Africa. That's Nigeria, and that's Cameroon. Next one, of course, is in Uganda, the school that you work with. The next one that is going online tomorrow is Kenya, new school. We have two schools in Tanzania, the one in the north and the one in the south. We have schools in India. We have a school in, if I can get this to work, and in Nepal. And we have another school in southern India. And then we have our school in Cambodia. 18 schools, 19 if you count the school that's in Denver. Now, student qualifications. First of all, they must pass an entrance exam with no less than a grade of 70. They must commit to 2 years of study. They must follow strict code of conduct, and they are given some funds while they're in school, not promised anything when they leave, but those funds are for them to live. A single student, not married, $50 a month, covers his food. He can send some money back home if he needs to. The $75 is for a married student. We encourage them to take $25 of that and send it back home. And yes, in third world countries, families can live on $25 a month. I know of situations where families of four live on 46 cents a day. It's not the best way to go, but it is third world country. That's what we're facing over there, the situation. Also, I think it's important that you know that these men dedicate 2 years of their life, and that's a very big thing. Anybody here tonight want to dedicate 2 years of your life to go to a school in a third world country and sleep on the floor and eat whatever food you can get and study day in and day out, and then be graduated to go back into your country and back where you lived and help start a congregation and baptize people? That's it. They're very, very dedicated people. Anyone who goes through this school, our schools, you know they are dedicated to take that time of their life. They leave their families. They have to leave their families behind because we have no way to take care of them where they are going to be coming. So this is what we're dealing with. And yet, let me tell you, it's so exciting. In the third world countries, we're making great strides. We have people in most of our schools. We have a waiting list of young men that want to go to school and learn the Bible. Four of our new schools. Let me just briefly, here's the way I want to do. I want to show you the newest schools, and there's four of them. Two are already online. One will go online tomorrow, and the fourth one will go online on March of this next year. These are the four newest schools. I want to graduate from that point, and then we're going to look at some schools that have already been established a number of months. And I want you to see several things. First of all, I want you to notice the enthusiasm that we find in these third world country schools, what they're wanting to do. Wonderful men, great men, who have dedicated themselves to working in the Lord's vineyard for the rest of their life to teach these men. I also want you to look for how God is involved in this situation. I want you to see if you can see God in this. First of all, let's just look at the schools. The first one of them is in Asuncion, Paraguay. The next one is Liberia. The next one is in Ibadan, Nigeria. And the last one is in Hono, Kenya. Those are our four newest schools. We're working to get these schools stabilized now. We'll work for the next year in doing this. We'll work as we go over and we train their teachers, as we train their directors who are native people, as we give them more Bible courses. Our desire is that they be well-trained people. Let's look at Kenya for just a moment. As you know where that is, that's in East Africa. And it's very close, of course, to Uganda. Uganda's right next to it there. Now, you'll see a red dot on the Kenya map, and there's going to be another map in just a moment, but that's where the school is going to be located. And there's also something else in the picture that I want you to look at. The person that's in that picture is a Maasai tribesman. Now, the Maasai tribes are one of the largest tribes in Central Africa and in East Africa, Northeast Africa. They're Bedouins. They move from place to place. They worship their ancestors. They worship a rock. You know, they'll worship a rock because that's a god to them. They worship the moon and a lot of things. But the interesting thing is that we now have infiltrated the ranks of the Maasai tribesmen. We are training young men who were Maasai, and we are sending them back into the Maasai tribes and the people in order to train them about God. This is a marvelous and wonderful thing. I remember years ago when I first went to Africa, I thought then how wonderful it would be if we could just get into the Maasai tribes. And, you know, they live out in the bush. A young man has to kill a lion in order to become a man. They're the ones who stand on one leg all day and use their spear to lean on. They're the people who slit a vein in a cow, and they drain the blood. Then they milk the milk from the cow, and they drink the milk and the blood together. You see, that's the type of people we're talking about, and we've been able to get into that, and it's really a wonderful thing. They are very heavy in Kenya, and that's why I put it this way. Look at this map right here. That's where the school will be, right there. But if you look at the map, in this area right in here in Kenya, just this area that I'm somewhat circling around, 75% of the Kenyan people live in that area. Not only that, we have approximately 350 to 400 congregations of the church in that area. Now, what's so good about that? What's good about that is we need feeder churches to send us young men so we can train them. with 350 to 400 congregations in this area, we're never going to be without students, you see. And that's what we want, and we're happy about this. And so that's a great thing for us right there. Now, this is another thing that's interesting right here. The young man on this side over here is Charles Aguto. Now, I'm not expecting you to remember any names, and I'm not just throwing names out. I just won't let you. I want you to know that there are real people here that are doing this, and this is one of the real people. This young man is a second generation, if you please. He was trained in our school in Arusha, Tanzania. He got his master's degree. He's very intelligent. He's going to be the director of the school in Kenya. We've reached the point, after 15 years of doing the extension schools, we've reached the point now where that we're now training people in the schools who mature, and now we're ready to put them in as directors in the schools. They've been through the curriculum. They know the curriculum. They've got the outlines and all of those things, and they can teach those outlines. And that's what's so exciting about this in this particular situation right here. This was the day that the students came to take their test and to sign up. There was about 45 young men there. We could only take 20 of them. Isn't that sad? We just don't have the room. 20 of them. The others put their name on a list, a waiting list. So we've already got a waiting list at this school right here. This is the dormitory area that where they will be staying for 2 years. Has sleeping facilities and a kitchen area and so on, but they cook their own food. Now, Monrovia, Liberia. Where in the world is that? Well, just look very carefully over on the western side of Africa. That's Liberia. It's a population of about 4 million. And there's an arrow pointing up to Monrovia, which is the capital city. What about this country? Well, first of all, it was established in 1821 by free slaves from the United States. The problem was, though, that when they went back, they were not accepted by the people there, by the tribesmen. And so there was constant war, and there was already war going on between the tribes. And so since 1821 up to just a few years ago, there was tremendous strife in this country and no peace at all. The brethren there, the gospel was brought there a number of years ago. They tried to put in a school of preaching, and from about 1985 on up to 97 and so on, they tried three times to get a school of preaching started. And every time they got it started, the riots broke out, there was killing, there was mass murder, and they had to drop the school and start over again at another time. This is a picture of the church building where the school is located, and I'll show you right here the school building and the dormitory. This was built back in the 80s. It's still a wonderful place. It's a wonderful structure. The dormitory will take care of about 36 students, as I remember. This congregation is the one that's going to be responsible for the school there. They have elders. I think I'm correct on this, that they have somewhere around about 200 members. But it's a good, strong congregation of the Lord's work. They have their own library, and as you look at the library, and by the way, that's 20-something years old, but it's got good books in it. But as you look at this library, almost anybody in America that wants to can have a library bigger than that. But this is a wonderful thing because it's difficult for us to get books overseas and carry books and get them over there. It's very costly. And so they have a library here, and we're happy about that. They also have a computer lab that we teach them computer, and they can use that. Ibadan, Nigeria. This is also one that is an exciting thing. Let me just tell you a little bit about this. Nigeria, there it is. 168 million people in Nigeria. It is the most populated country in all of Africa. 168 million people. They're practically standing on top of each other. And if you look just for a few moments, I want to show you just some some slides, and I know this is a little bit difficult to understand or see or to realize what it is, but this is a view, if you want to say, looking out over the city of Ibadan, which has about 3 million people. Now, the school is there, but there's also a sister school or an extension school that is in Lagos, and I'll show you that. Just look for a moment down at the bottom of the map, if you would, right in here. There's Ibadan, and there's Lagos. Now, if you look at Ibadan, is about 3 million people. Okay, we have the school there. Have the sister school in Lagos. Now, if you draw kind of an oval shape and include those two cities in it, look what you're looking at. 15 to 20 million people in that area. Now, it's wonderful to know that in that area, we have somewhere in the area of about 400 congregations of the Lord's Church. But watch this. If we took this away and you could just take that area of Nigeria right there. That was the area that our missionaries went to the first time that we began to evangelize Nigeria. In that area, we have over 3,000 congregations of the church. So you see, the Church of Christ is well known in these areas. Now, if you draw a line right across the center of it here, this is basically Christian down here. The other area up north is Muslim, and also the tribes that are fighting each other. It's the most dangerous part of the area. Nigeria is one of the most dangerous countries in the world. I was there just a few months ago, and I tell you, I kept my eyes open. I think I slept at night with one eye open. It's really, really a very dangerous country. But at the same time, aren't you glad that we go to these countries and share the gospel with them? What better place to go than where sin is, where Satan's strong, when we face him with the gospel? So that's the story of this right here. So now let me go on share some thoughts with you. The Ibadan School has operated for nine years. It has graduated 51 students. Of those 51 students, they're all working in the Lord's Church. Most of them are evangelists. Most students have established new congregations and are working with the churches. And the current class that we've just enrolled is 25 students. We could have had more if we'd wanted to, but we don't have the room to take care of them. But on top of that, the Lagos School operates as a part-time school, and the current class is 20. So we've got 45 students in these two schools, sister schools, that are training to be evangelists for the church. And our goal in this area is to establish as many congregations in this area as is in the other area on the other side. And I think we can do it with God's help. All students, of course, preach full-time. Now I'm going to just show you some pictures, if I could. This is a fish pond where they actually grow fish. It's very important to them over there, and it's part of their diet. So this is a pond that where you can come and buy fish. They'll net them out for you and sell them to you right there. These are typical pictures right here. These are little Nigerian young ladies. Just want you to notice. Well, I believe there's a little boy there at the other side. But I want you to notice. You notice how emaciated they are? Their legs are very small. It's because they're poor. Nigeria is one of the richest countries in Africa with oil. It is also one of the poorest because of the corruption that's in the government. Tragic story. That's a mosque, and that's not uncommon. Let me just show you some slides here right quick. This is a picture. Look at the shops behind there. That's very typical. The next scene is this is a regular highway right here. This is one of the main highways, and look at it. It's not even paved, and it has big holes in it, and so on. Now, I put this in here for a purpose. If you look in the background, you'll see some really nice-looking houses. They also are surrounded by a 16-foot wall. That's where the oil people live. They live inside that compound. And they have guards at night and everything. That's where the rich people, if you want to call it, that's what they call it, the rich people live. Now come forward and look at the shanty town that's on the banks of the river. That's typical. But do you see the contrast? Absolute squalor and poor and poverty in a country that is very, very wealthy. This is a picture with me in it. I'm the best looking guy there, so I make sure you see that. We were there recently, and my cohort, Stephen Ashcraft, you probably don't know him, but a wonderful man. We met with the director, and the director's the guy in the middle. Now, that is a typical type of clothing that they wear. They asked me if they could make me one of those suits. And I said, well, I wanted to be kind. I didn't want to say no. I said, I'll tell you what I would like for you to do. Since there's so many people without food, I'd like for you to take the money that you would make me that suit with, and would you give it to the poor? I said, I would rather you do that. And they said, okay, we'll do that. But I didn't want to tell them that I couldn't bring that back to America and wear that in America, because it's not, but it's typical. This is a typical garb that they wear. This is the church in Ibadan, 65, 75 members there. This is the group of men that came together. There's about 45 of them there that from the two schools. This is their dormitory. Look what the dormitory looks like. They sleep on the floor. That's right. They sleep on the floor for 2 years in these dormitory rooms. This is a congregation. This is a building of one of our churches there, and you'll notice the roof. What do you do when it rains? I asked them that, and they said, we just go over in this corner out of the rain. See, that's very common. Most of the church buildings there are dilapidated. Ascension, Paraguay. I like the way what God does. This is a remarkable thing to me. That's Paraguay, right in the center of South America. Now, on either side of Paraguay is Brazil on one side and Argentina on the other. There are two congregations of the church in Paraguay. They're both in Asunción, which is the capital. One congregation has about 125 members. The other one has about 80 members. They're in full fellowship with each other and are working together in the school of preaching that's going to be there. This is a really interesting story right here. Oh, how God works. This is the church building in Asunción with a congregation of about 125. The building was built about 10 years ago. The building on that side over there is a casino. And they've approached the church time after time after time. We want to buy your building. They said, no, we don't want to sell their building. It's a great location. It's on one of the main thoroughfares right in the middle of Asunción, the capital. It's a great place. We don't want to sell. Okay, so when we went to talk with them, and they knew that we were going to put in a school with them and helping them, and we told them that, you know, if you had a little bit more room, we could have more students, and we could have dormitories, and you could have a larger building. Is there any way to do that? And light bulbs went on. They went and told the casino, we'll sell our building. Really? How much you want for it? We want $1 million. And they got it the next day. They wanted it that bad. Guess what, though? They had already located another building just down the street, that would be big enough for them as a congregation to expand. It has dorm rooms. It has classroom areas. It has kitchen areas. It's the perfect situation. And guess what? They ended up with a pretty good-sized pile of money after they bought the building. So that's the way God works. I love it. I just think it's marvelous. Now, these are the American missionaries that are there. They will not be working directly with the school, but they will help us out in probably teaching some courses there. There's a baptism. You've seen things like that. Now, there's basically five major areas in Paraguay. This is it right here. That's it. The rest of it is ranch land and large cattle ranches and so on like that. So our goal is to start in Ascension and reach out to those four other areas, and then to reach over into Argentina and into Brazil and teach the gospel there. We've got two classes here. The first class will start in March of 13, and the next class they're already signing up for 2015 for the second class. Update on Cameroon. Love this. Oh, boy, you're going to love this. Cameroon, marvelous place. We, 21 months ago, on January the 1st of last year, I was in that country. While you were having fun on New Year's Eve, I was over there getting ready to set the school up and get it started on the first day of January. We did get it started, and we started it right there in Cameroon, and you can see that's West Africa. And these are the teachers and the director. I have never, I don't think, never is a long time, but I don't think I've ever met a man that is so remarkable as this man right here. His name is Elangwe Isawe Greg. Elangwe. Unbelievable person. Highly educated. Speaks four languages. His wife has her master's degree in accounting. Just a wonderful couple. This man is a wonderful director because he is very excited about the work. This is our first class. They will graduate here just in a few months. In fact, we're getting ready for it in the end of December. Be our first class. This is them in class. This is a typical congregation. They started this congregation. Has about 25 members in it, something like it. They also now are starting an elementary school. They have 57 little children that want to go to an elementary school. Isn't that marvelous? They are doing this. And that's what's so remarkable about this thing is, you know, they're doing it. It's their thoughts. It's their ideas. Look at some statistics. 20 students established in January of 2011, 21 months ago or something like it. In 2011, they had 226 baptisms, 171 restorations. They started or established four new congregations and went out and found seven other congregations of the church that was dying, and they regenerated them and taught the scriptures in those areas and brought in new members. In 2012, they've had up to the end of August, they had 151 baptisms, 99 restorations, three more new congregations, and four more restored congregations. How do you like that, folks? Isn't that exciting? I mean, that's really, really good. Current goals, establish an elementary kindergarten school. They've already done that, working on it. They're looking at a book. Well, they already have the building. They want to establish a daycare for mothers who are working to leave their children there, and the daycare will take care of itself. It'll pay for itself. Self-supporting, newborn to 5 years, need funds to purchase furniture and etc. Number three, they want to establish a home for orphaned children. No need funds for purchasing furniture and etc. for that. That's coming on down the road. But see, they're excited about this, and this is what they want to do, and they're going to do it. Update on Togo. Togo, little bitty tiny sliver of dirt right between Ghana and Benin and Nigeria. You can see it right there. Here's a little bit better map. Look how slim that is. We started with this work about 3.5 years ago. We now are in our second class. And this man is Willie Glay. Willie was an evangelist. He was educated in Brown Trail School of Preaching in Fort Worth. He went back to Ghana, becoming an evangelist there. He's been very, very vocal and everything in teaching people. But he also wanted to have a school in Togo. So he went over into Togo, and he had a very good friend whose name was Cephas Omotello. This is our director of our school there, remarkable man. I've never, never known a person that could deal with denominational doctrine and denominational people like he does. You know, it's amazing how God puts people in certain places where they can serve and use their talent so well. He's very good about debating or discussing things with denominational people. This is one of the roads. In fact, this was the road I went down. It's called a highway, but of course things are growing over it. But we went 22 miles from Ghana into Togo in a car on this road, and it took us 2.5 hours to do that. So you can tell it's very, very poor, a very poor country. This was our first building. It's now the place where our teachers come and teach, and they sleep there and stay there. And Cephas also has his house there. This was our first building. This is our next building. Now we've grown and we've got a lot of students, so we now rented this building as well, and it has a congregation in it of about 65 or 70 people. This is a kitchen, folks, in case you can't realize what it is. It's a kitchen. That's where they make their food. They buy their own food, and they fix their own food. This is where they sleep for 2 years. Class number one, 2009 to 11, 9 students. 6 denominational preachers were in that class. Now, you know, when we started, there were very few members of the church that wanted to come to school. There just wasn't enough congregations. And so some denominational men came and said, we would like to go to school. And so Willie enrolled them. 6 denominational preachers in the first class, all of them were converted, plus, and I want to make this a point here, plus most of their congregations. We did get some of the buildings, too. Got some of the buildings with the congregation. This class of 9 students established 16 new congregations in 2 years while they were in school. This is them. I want you to look at the man on the far outside in the very colorful clothing there. He was a denominational preacher. He was converted. He went back to his congregation and started preaching the truth. The group that was overseeing that work heard about it, and so they told him, they said, you're going to stop teaching error. He said, I'm not teaching error, I'm teaching truth. They said, no, you're not going to teach this. If you do this, we're going to have you thrown in jail. He said, I'm not going to stop teaching it. They threw him in jail. It cost us $1,100 to get him out. But the problem was, if he'd have stayed in jail, there was no food. He only got water. He had to sleep on the floor. That was it. And if he wanted food, his family had to bring it to him. Well, we knew we had to get him out pretty quickly. So I contacted some wonderful Christian folks, and very quickly we got the money and sent it over, and he was freed, and now he's back, and he's taken some of his members out of that group that followed him, and he's teaching them. Class number 2, 20 students. 8 denominational preachers, 5 of them have already been converted. We're working on 2 of them. 1 went back home. He couldn't take it. We've got most of their congregations. In May of 2012, a campaign took place with this group. They had a 1-week campaign. They baptized 54 people and established 5 new congregations. Here they are. Here are the pictures of them as they are working in the campaign in 5 different villages. There they are, knocking doors, as we say. This is part of the church that's there. This is the ladies' class. They even have a ladies' class that meets every week, And they studied the Bible together. And here they are. They're studying the Bible together. This is the congregation. Now, those are just a crosscut of our schools. We've got 18 of them. And these I've just shown you to say our other schools are just as effective. They're just as strong, doing just the same thing. We're very happy about them. We did start something called a vocational agricultural training. Now, this is not anything new to you if you know about Uganda. When Francis and I started the school over in Uganda and got it started, our thought was to do something like this, and Francis is doing a vocational training. Well, let me just, I've got five slides, I think, and I just want to share this with you. We now have a full-time man, and that's him in the middle right there. His name is Gage Coldwater. He's an old Oklahoma boy. He's a ranch man. His father and them run a ranch up there and own it, and he's very into husbandry and all kinds of things. And so he's now making, he's drawing up the paperwork and the manuals to leave with people as we go from school to school. He's going to each school, and it's a course that's in our curriculum to learn how to do this so they can be self-supporting. We also want to put it into the congregation so they can do it. He's showing there, let me go back to that just a minute. He's teaching them how to grow snails, and this is in Cameroon. Now, Cameroon is French, and so they like snails. They can make a living growing snails. Here he is again, building the cage. He's building rabbit cages. He teaches them how to do that. Teach them how to raise chickens and ducks. Also fish, that's tilapia. He shows them how to take just a large vat and grow all the tilapia that you want. Rabbits, goats, chickens, ducks. He's also showing them how to plant a garden. This is a garden before we arrived. This is them preparing the soil. And this is the garden after it had been worked. And then this is the produce that came about. Cabbage and upside-down tomato vines and et cetera. You see, the important thing is that we want to train these men so that they can support themselves in this work. There's not enough money in America to send checks to all the evangelists across the world that want to preach the gospel. So we believe it's very important that they support themselves. And that's our presentation for tonight. I don't know your situation, but I know that, you know, when I am in the Lord's family and I'm with you, with congregations like this, I never like to leave without offering an invitation. And I remind us that an invitation is not our invitation. It's God's invitation. I don't know your situation. I don't know where you are with your relationship to God, but I know that if you're not a Christian, you are not saved. You're not going to make it to heaven. It's an important thing that you realize where your situation is and where you are with the Lord. And I also would like to say that as Christians, we have opportunities to pray and ask for forgiveness, and this is a good time tonight to do that. So, if there's any need that you have, we can offer prayer, we can talk with you, we can visit with you, we can study with you. Whatever we can do, we'll help with you. And if you're subject to that, will you come, please, while together we stand.